98 FM.
Yeah, I'm obviously delighted with the call up. It's an honour to represent your country at any level, but to get into the international squad is the pinnacle, and it's also great for the league.
In terms of the cold, it's cold. Yeah, it is. It would be a lot colder than at home, but nothing to be worried about, or nothing that's going to probably change anything. You know, we just have to deal with it and make sure we're well prepared. And obviously, we know we're playing a very good side.
I still think we'll beat them. I think we're a better team than them. But that has to be reflected on the scoreboard, and I don't want it to sound like sour grapes, but I think, I honestly do believe that we will beat them.
Just their left foot was he was on the ball, and he was just making a run out from just along the sideline, and I suppose I slid in and I kicked the ball, and just went, it landed straight into the, you know, the chip fans that are usually on the pitch that just ride the fans with chips. So the ball landed in the deep half fryer, and I think the girl that was serving food in there got a bit of a fright.
If you can reach, and no season's the same, but if you can get anywhere near the levels the club achieved in 2014 and get used that as a yardstick, if you pick up that amount of wins, if you pick up those amount of points, you're going to be thereabouts at the end of the season. And that's what they've got to really try and do.
And he said to me, you'd be marking Ronaldo. We're just looking at each other, scratching our heads, saying, is this really true? And I remember just standing in the tunnel, like, looking across at the Real Madrid team and thinking, these are superstars. But the one sort of the memory that will stick out to me was they were the best smelling team I've ever played against. I don't know what they had on them, but they smelled beautiful.
Here we go. Now, this is 98FM's League of Ireland podcast with Jamie Moore.
They say all good things come to those who wait. Andy Boyle and Darragh Horgan and the League of Ireland has waited for a long time to have League of Ireland players in the Republic of Ireland senior squad. This week, on Wednesday, that wait ended. Well, kind of anyway, with Boyle and Horgan being called up by the manager Martin O'Neill to the 35-man provisional squad to take on Austria in a World Cup qualifier on Saturday week. Great news for the league. We'll hear from Andy Boyle in a couple of minutes' time, plus get the thoughts of two of his former managers on just why he is as good as he is. Dundalk defender Sean Gannon is currently braving minus 3 degrees temperatures in St. Petersburg in Russia, getting ready for their Europa League game tomorrow night. He'll tell us how training went on Wednesday and how they plan to win the game and keep their hopes of course, getting through second or even first in the group alive. Beating the leaders would be a great way to continue their brilliant form in Europe this season. We'll also look ahead to the relegation promotion playoff between Wexford Utes and Drogheda United at United Park this coming Friday night, with Wexford hotshot Danny Furlong, including why he's kicking footballs into chip fans, and the Drogs manager Pete Mahan. Alan Matthews agreed to stay for Longford Town for another 2 seasons. He'll tell us why he's decided to stay in a battle to win promotion from the First Division. And I'm also going to talk to Pat Flynn, who wrote possibly the best retirement statement in the history of League of Ireland football. And Pat will put his voice to a statement for us on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast in the next couple of minutes.
98FM.
But there's only one place to start on this week's League of Ireland podcast, and is with the... But there's only one place to start on this week's League of Ireland podcast, and it's with the fantastic news, if you're a League of Ireland fan, that Dundalk duo Darragh Horgan and Andy Boyle have been called up to the Ireland senior squad for the first time. The manager Martin O'Neill named a 35-man provisional squad for next Saturday's World Cup 2018 qualifier away to Austria in Vienna. And in that squad, of course, are Horgan and Boyle, have won 3 league titles in a row in FAI Cup, performing heroically now in the Europa League, and also looking forward to this Sunday's FAI Cup final against Cork City at the Aviva Stadium. The squad was named this morning, and I asked the manager Martin O'Neill at his press conference exactly how and why the lads had made the squad.
Well, I think I said that Horgan would have been included anyway in the squad the last time, but they were playing a lot of games, and I think that they had matches either side of our particular games. I've been impressed by the way that they have played, and the very fact that they have competed very strongly in European football. Of course, like everything else, these are still step ups to playing international football, which is the supposed to be the creme de la creme, and we are playing against top class opposition every single time we play. We played against the Serbian side, who included players from the Bundesliga and from the Premier League, and so those things are hard to make step ups. But the players have done well. Quite a number have done very well, and I think that difficult decision to make, to see, you know, where you are playing, the sort of standard you're playing at, and then to make that step up. Any international manager will tell you that I don't see the German team being able to think about, you know, second or third division leagues for them. They're talking about their main leagues, but for us it's a bit different. But they've acquitted themselves brilliantly in games, and attitude alone has been fantastic. And I think that any players who are called up from there deserve to do so.
There have been calls due to Dundalk's brilliant form and the form of a number of the players for a long time for some of them to be included in the squad. This is the first time they have been. Of course, former Ireland manager Giovanni Trapattoni famously said there is no league in Ireland. Well, Giovanni, there is a league in Ireland, but your predecessor... No, that's an incorrect phrase. Of course, predecessor is before. So what's the phrase for the manager who filled the job after somebody? And I can't really figure out what it is, and I'm on my own this week, so I don't even have Darren or Derek to help me. Ah, yes, the answer, of course, is successor. Predecessor before, successor after. So, let's get on with the show. Giovanni Trapattoni's successor, Martin O'Neill, was asked at the press conference today if he'd been surprised at just how good Boyle and Horgan had been.
Well, I think that you would be surprised, yes. I think that we all in this room would be surprised at the progress that they've made. And again, lads in this room would see more League of Ireland football than I do in that sense. And I think that there would be genuine surprise at that. But naturally, a very pleasant surprise.
And I also managed to ask the Ireland manager the $64 million question, or $64,000 question, depending on what you think the correct phrase is, if he feels that the two lads are actually good enough to be in the team. It's a 35-man squad. The squad will be cut before the meet-up for the Austrian game, and probably unlikely, even though we don't want to say it, that they may not make the cut-down squad, and it will be quite a surprise for him to see them on the pitch in this qualifier. But I asked the manager what he thought about that.
Well, I think those are $64,000 questions, particularly the last one. How do they do? I don't think that you would ever really know how someone might do until actually playing it. But it's still a step. It's still a step up. And it's a step up for anybody playing in... it's a step up for boys playing in the Championship to come and then play international football. As over the last couple of years, I've experienced that. The players have had to come and get to try and get themselves to another level. So that is difficult. So how one would never know how someone might cope, but have they deserved an opportunity to be involved in the squad? Absolutely.
Now, we'll talk more about those call-ups with two of the men who signed Andy Boyle. Alan Matthews in a moment, who had Andy Boyle at Shelburne. But before Shells, Boyle played for UCD in the First Division. The manager at the time was Pete Mann. And Pete will talk to us in more detail about his own team, Drogheda, and their relegation promotion playoff against Wexford in a moment or two. But first of all, gave me his immediate reaction to the news that Boyle and Darrell Horgan were in the squad.
It's a good thing. Should have come for a friendly game, we think, because I don't think they have a realistic chance of playing in a qualifier, so... No, it's great news, and I'm particularly delighted for Andy because we took him into UCD there when he was 16 from Crumlin United. So, yeah, I'm really, really happy for him. And Darrell Horgan has been the best player in our league the last 2 years, anyway. So, both of them are well.
Yeah, it's been a long road for Andy as well. He's, you know, as you said, played for yourself at UCD from being a schoolboy player, played actually in the same Crumlin team as Richie Towell did, and then was playing for a couple of clubs in the First Division, including Shells. Got to move to Dundalk and has won three leagues in a row there and been one of the best centre-halves in the league.
That's no doubt about that. He's done really, really well for himself, and it just shows you what, you know, Andy always attitude, and that counts for a lot in today's football, and I'm delighted for him because he fully deserves it.
Yes, I asked Martin O'Neill this morning at the press conference, Pete, if he could see them actually in the team, and he kind of sidestepped the question and said, you know, for now they're focusing on their next couple of games with Dundalk. And as you said there yourself, it's probably unlikely that they'll see any game time and maybe won't even make the cut-down squad, but it's still a boost all the same, and possibly looking ahead to that friendly in March for them possibly to get some game time.
Well, I think so. That's more realistic because it is a step up to international football, and this game, I don't think it's realistic to expect in the squad, or sorry, in the final squad. So it's probably more for the experience, but it'll stand them in good stead coming into the friendlies in March.
Drogheda manager Pete Mahon there. The man who signed Andy Boyle from Pete Mahon's UCD to go and play for Shelburne was Alan Matthews. Alan has recently agreed to stay on as Longford Town manager for two more seasons. His full interview on the way in a couple of minutes' time. But Alan also gave me his thoughts on the call-up, particularly Andy's, and just how well he might do if he gets a chance to play for his country.
Well, it's great, but I hope it isn't just tokenism. I hope that he actually makes the cut. I'm absolutely delighted that Andy has progressed the way he was. We were very disappointed to lose him to Dundalk at Shelburne. He had done really well for me. He played in the cup final. He was an integral part of our back four at 20 years of age, with Stephen Paisley playing beside him when we got promoted to the Premier Division with Shells. And as I said, he was superb in the cup final when we played for over an hour with 10 men against a full-time outfit in Sligo. So disappointing that he left the club, and absolutely not surprised that he's developed. He's an excellent bloke, an excellent family behind him. And I'm just delighted for him because he's a really good fella. He's a smart player. And I'd have no qualms about putting them into an international setup. And I just hope that this isn't Martin O'Neill. I don't think it is. I think he's genuinely deserved the call-up. And I think Martin has seen him and Daryl Hogan play enough. But I'd love to see him in the squad that actually goes and travels out to Austria and be a part of the squad, not just be a cut player that goes after the initial squad is mentioned. But he's got a good career ahead of him. I think he'll play on Wednesday. He'll play in the cup final, or towards the rather, in St. Petersburg, and he'll play. He will, I would imagine, have a number of options available to him next year. So he deserves it. Good bloke, a really good player, and he has the ability, I think, to go a lot further.
And Alan, before we speak about Longford Town and your decision to stay for a couple more years and the plans to try and bounce back first time, just a word on Dundalk on Thursday in the Europa League away in St. Petersburg. We saw from the first leg, again, they had a chance to dream for a few minutes, and unfortunately, I think personally the amount of games they've had caught up with them, and Zenit were able to get those couple of goals. But they'll be going there, and certainly Stephen Kenny on Soccer Public on Monday night was going there in confident mood.
Absolutely, and if you look at it, Jamie, I mean, I was at the game, the Dane Massey header that came out the wrong side of the crossbar, that makes the game 2-0, and Dundalk have enough to hang on to, and that could have given them an extra spurt of energy and adrenaline to push them over the line, because no doubt about it, they are going to hit the wall at some stage of the season. They haven't to date. They're going out full of confidence. They have got nothing to be afraid of. If they pick anything up from the game, it's a bonus. And I think Stephen will have them mentally and physically in good shape to go and do the job. I think they've earned an awful lot of respect from outside the league, but the way they've gone and played in these matches against Alkmaar, against Lviv, against obviously St. Petersburg, or Zenit up in Tala, they've really, they've played a game that other teams probably wouldn't have expected from an Irish side. And I'd expect them to do the same here. They'll sit in deep, probably play on the counter, try and keep possession, hold on to possession as best they can in the last third, and get compact. And I think it's going to be hard for them to get the right result, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did, because they were very unlucky in Legia. They went over and were able to come away with a positive result from Bathy Borisov, and likewise at the earlier rounds they've gone off to Finland and Iceland and have done the job that was required. So I think they'll do the job tomorrow. Whether they get a win or not might be beyond them, but don't be surprised they come out with a result that keeps them very much fighting for the remaining spots that could see them qualify from the other side of Christmas.
Yeah, and they've taken 4 points from, of course, the other two opposition who they'll play in the last two matches, so they'll really hope that they can come through this game on Thursday, win, lose or draw, and that they will still have a chance to
It's a free hit, Jeff, because nobody's expecting them to come away with a positive result, and there's no pressure on them, but they've been playing under pressure week in, week out in the league over the last 6 weeks or so. They've all been pressure games. Go back to the semi-final, taking a replay up to Derry. They had to play Rovers, they had to play us, they had to play games that they had to win, and they did win them. They have to beat Cork, so they've played in pressure. It'll be a brilliant atmosphere out there tomorrow night. Crowd, I know the conditions are going to be Arctic and Baltic in comparison to what they are here, but they've stepped up to the mark, and it's a great credit to everybody at the club, players and staff, that they've been able to do it. I wouldn't be surprised, as I said, if they do themselves more than justice tomorrow night. Hopefully they get a great result.
Alan, just the last one on Dundalk. I know you do a lot of work in the media as a pundit, and you've managed in the league for a number of years. Stephen Kenny himself and his staff, and how they've got through the number of games they have in the last while, but they actually will have had a week now to prepare for this one, whereas for the last number of games it's been 3 days. How do you reckon that's worked for them, just with so many games in such a short space of time, in terms of trying to get the team ready? Because I know managers like to do 11v11 shape work and video work and, you know, specific stuff for each match, but it's very hard when you're playing every 3 days to be able to do that.
It absolutely is, yeah. And I think one of the key components of prep is rest and recovery, and proper rest and recovery. And it's been proven, I think, that they have the correct people looking after their the prehab and the rehab, really. They're getting prepared for matches, they're getting recovery in, and they have the right people in the background. Graham Bourne, it's been well documented, influence that he has on the team in preparing them and getting them ready then after games. So I think they've been able to, you know, take a well-earned break for the last couple of days and focus on getting tactically right, getting technically right where they need to be in games, because their physical fitness isn't going to change. You'll also find that they've got possibly two guys injured as opposed to maybe five or six. So they're able to cover it now because they've got through the quagmire of all those games. And it was a real, real tough ask. And, like, I mean, they've come through it because they've been physically conditioned. Not just this year, but I think it's a build-up over the last couple of years. You look at the physique and the conditioning of the players, the way that has evolved over the last couple of seasons. It's taken a couple of years to probably be able to get so much strength and core conditioning in the tank that they're seeing the benefits of it now. So they're able to go literally game after game after game. One of the great things, I think, that keeps them motivated has been the fact that they're winning games. And I think Stephen he's got a good job to do, because they're following on the previous results. They're following on a positive result. They're following on a positive performance. Some players mightn't have been able to hit the standards that they've hit previously. He can filter in guys around them to maybe give them a rest and bring other fellas in who have the hunger to go and try and play. So he's been able to do that. But as I say, now it's just a game this week. They'll deal with the Cork game, I think, when they come back. So I would imagine they're in good physical and mental condition, definitely.
Yeah, that's Longford Town manager Alan Matthews, who signed and knows Andy Boyle very well, having had him at Shelburne. And before him, the Drogheda manager Pete Mann, who also had Boyle at UCD. We're going to hear from Andy himself now very briefly. He's in Russia getting ready to prepare for Dundalk's Europa League match against Zenit St. Petersburg tomorrow evening on Thursday night. And Andy, via WhatsApp voice note, gave me his brief reaction to the call-up.
Yeah, I'm obviously delighted with the call-up. It's an honour to represent your country at any level, and to get into the international squad is the pinnacle. And it's also great for the league.
Yeah, we're going to speak to Andy hopefully in more detail after Sunday's FAI Cup final. Our focus is going to stay on that match against Dundalk. And the team have just finished training. It's now 7:20 at the time the podcast is being recorded on Wednesday evening. They've just finished training in St. Petersburg at the stadium. And Sean Gannon gave me his immediate reaction to the training session and also their long trip to Russia. They left Dublin Airport earlier this week and had a difficult flight with a couple of delays and sort of that, but they managed to get to Russia and trained at the stadium. And I asked Sean how it went.
Yeah, obviously the trip's gone to plan so far. You know, obviously everything's worked out well. You know, training today was very good. You know, we got used to the surroundings and the temperature around the time we're going to be playing, so that was good, you know, for us to get a feel for it like that.
Gano, it's -3 degrees Celsius with light snow predicted for St. Petersburg, so quite... Yeah, chilly, some may say.
In terms of the cold, it's cold, yeah, it is. It would be a lot colder than at home, but nothing to be worried about, or nothing that's going to probably change anything. You know, we just have to deal with it and make sure we're well prepared, and obviously we know we're playing a very good side.
And Sean, you mentioned there just how much of a tough task it is. The home leg, having gone ahead and then lost the game, was quite disappointing, but a very, very good performance for the majority of it. What's the thoughts on the opposition and the task ahead of you tomorrow night?
They're the highest ranked team in the competition, and when we played them last week, they showed they have a lot of top quality players. So we have to go into the game thinking positive, and obviously the manager and things like that will have a game plan set up for us, and we just have to go and execute it. And obviously we're looking forward to the game, a big crowd and in a good stadium, and you know, we're all really looking forward to it.
Dundalk's Sean Gannon there speaking to me via WhatsApp very briefly after training. A quick chat with Sean, of course his focus is on the match, and thanks to Sean and Andy for taking some time out of their schedule to speak to us here on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast. The players in the league, of course, are what makes this podcast work. Now, the first port of call in terms of looking ahead to matches this weekend is the relegation promotion playoff. It's Wexford Utes from the Premier Division against Drogheda United from the First Division. Wexford leading 2-0 from the first leg thanks to second half goals from Danny Furlong and that last minute volley, a cracker by Lee Chin very late in the game. In a few minutes time we will speak to Danny Furlong, but as you heard earlier on, we were joined by Pete, who spoke to us about Andy Boyle, but in more detail and depth about the match on Friday night, which is at United Park in Drogheda with a 7:45 kickoff. So here's how my chat with Pete went on. 98 FM. Pete, let's look ahead to your game now with Drogheda United this coming Friday night. A game I'll be at in United Park. You're taking on Wexford in the second leg, as I mentioned, of the promotion relegation playoff. A 2-0 defeat on Monday, Pete. Two goals in the second half and that last minute volley by Lee Chin. A fantastic volley from Wexford's point of view, but that must have been very disappointing for you to concede the second so late in the match.
It was, because we had done particularly well in the match, and really and truly we outplayed them in the first half. There's no question about that. They came into the game in the last 5 minutes of the first half and they had a chance that I think was a number 10 missed. But before that, we hit the post, the bar. They couldn't really cope with the movement and the passing that we showed. And it was very disappointing for me to win 0 at half time, but I felt it should have been maybe 3-1 up. But look, that's football, and they hit us with a couple of points then, you know, in injury time. The first goal was a very good goal from their perspective. Second goal, I wouldn't be too happy about from our defending, but I was really kicking the stomach it was for us, because you know, we've been happy coming out of there in the end with a 1-0. But look, it's 2-0, and anything can happen. This game is far from over. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we're going to speak to the man who scored that first goal, Mr. Danny Furlong, in a couple of minutes. Pete, I was speaking to Jake Hyden and Garrett McCaffrey after the match, and they just mentioned that first half an hour spell. I was watching the game myself on Twitter and listened to a commentary. As you said, the post, the crossbar, and a couple of other really good chances. Unfortunately, none of them went in.
Yeah, we had a little bit of luck last Friday against Cove when we got, you know, we got off to a dreadful start. We showed great resilience to stay in the game, and then a great bit of character to get a goal second half, and I think maybe we used up a fair bit of luck in that match, to be honest, and it deserved it a little bit then on Monday. But look, it is what it is, Jamie. You know football, how fickle it is. Anything can happen. I still think we beat them. I think we're a better team than them, but that has to be reflected on the scoreboard, and I don't want it to sound like sour grapes, but I think I honestly do believe that we will beat them.
Yes, of course, the start of the match, Pete, will be very important, and it's actually the opposite of what you would have faced last weekend when you were, in fact, leading Cove by 2-0, and all of a sudden, after 10 minutes, it was 2-2. So you've seen, to your disadvantage last week, that, you know, these leads of 2 goals in playoffs can be overcome.
Yes, and this team that we have has put us through every emotion possible during the course of the season. They put us through the ringer more times, but they always seem to come out with the goods when we really need them. And we really need it now on Friday night. You know, we don't have to go gung-ho. We can be patient. I want us to try and play the way we did in the first half on Monday night. And I feel that if we do that, we will create chances. And then it's only a matter of putting one of those chances in, and then it's a whole new ball game. But the most important thing is that we're patient. We don't go mad and leave gaps at the back. That we're very, very disciplined. And because we can score late in the second half, and this can go to penalties. And from my experience in these playoffs, there's always twists and turns. You only got to look to the game last season when Finn Harris brought on a young boy, PJ Banda, and, you know, nobody had heard of him, and he comes up with the winner. So, look, as I said, this game is full of surprises, and it ain't over yet.
Yes, I spoke to Garrett McCaffrey on the podcast last week, and he was saying about yourselves 2-0 up heading into the second leg, that had you got a third goal, as in to go 1-0 up, it would have made things very difficult for Cove. And would that be the same now for yourselves, Pete? That you need to make sure, if possible, that Wexford don't score first to make it 3?
Well, that's what I'm hoping, Jamie. But you know yourself, you can, the best laid plans in the world, and you can do all the preparation you like. When the players go on the pitch, you don't know what's going on. And as I said to you earlier, our gang, they put us through every emotion this year. So I'm just hoping that to give ourselves a good chance in this match, we have to turn up like we did on Monday. You know, we're best when our backs are against the wall. And, you know, we have a great chance here. I know we're 2-0 down. We're playing at home. And we're playing against a team who haven't won many games this year. And they've conceded quite a lot of goals. And I know they, especially away from home, and they've been able to rest players. And maybe that, you know, was part of the reason why they conceded so many goals towards the end of the season. But I'm just going to concentrate on our own prowess. If we get our game together, as I said earlier, I think we will create chances and we have to score this time.
Let's concentrate on your own gang, Pete, as you mentioned there. Sean Brennan got that very silly red card down in Limerick towards the end of the season, and he's been suspended since, although he did come back to play a couple of minutes for you off the bench on Monday night. He's been one of your best players this season. I'm sure he's in your mind for a recall from the start on Friday.
He certainly is, and I'm just heading up to training now. I just said I have to assess. We let the players do their own recovery yesterday. We're going to get them in now, have massages and all that kind of stuff, see how they're feeling. Because we've flogged the same horses now for what, 5 or 6 games now on the trot, where Wexford, as I said, could rest a couple of players, and in actual fact we're able to rest all our team at different periods there over the last couple of weeks. So we have a few tired bodies, at least we had on Monday after the game, but now I'm expecting a little bit of freshness here tonight again, and we'll have a look at them all, examine them and see how they're feeling, and then we'll stick the team down after training tonight and keep it close to my chest. That's what pride is for the game.
And Pete, you mentioned there about the amount of games that your team, and it's been a very consistent team, probably 11 or 12 players have started the last 6 or 8 matches. You are a part-time club, a first division club that trains in the evenings, and you've had to go Friday, Monday for probably one of the only times this season, last weekend, and you've now only have one session to get ready for the game on Friday. So it's something that your young players maybe wouldn't have been overly used to being made play or having to play kind of 3 games in 7 days.
Well, now they know what it's going to be like if we should get promoted, because that's what happened in the Premier Division. They play midweek games and you have to be ready for it. And as you know, what you said to our players there last week, if we don't beat Wexford over two games during the course of this week, then we don't deserve to be in the Premier League, because we wouldn't be ready for it, because Wexford are down the bottom of the league. That's why they're in a playoff, and they've struggled this season, except maybe 1 or 2 games, where if we go into the Premier League now, we'd have to kind of dismantle the team a little bit, and I'm not too sure that I really want to do that. Having said that, we definitely want to get promoted and then we can see what it's like. But, you know, we've built a decent little team this year. We want to try and bring it on further next year, and I'm not too sure that the Premier Division is the place to do that. But as I said, having said that, I wouldn't mind finding out.
Of course, Pete, just on that, a final 2 questions. I know we spoke at an under-17 game recently, and you were kind of saying just that about the club trying to rebuild and maybe being a winning team most weeks in the First Division for maybe one more year would be better than being a team that might struggle at the bottom of the Premier, and that clearly by your previous answer there is something that has been in your mind a little bit.
Yes, it has, and I'm being realistic here. You know, and I don't want this to sound like a defeatist. I'm not a defeatist in any way. We want to get promoted, of course we do, but I'm just trying to, you know, think what would happen to us. You know, if we were to get promoted, would we be in a situation where we were last year, where we were winning 1 in every 4 games, maybe? And that's not going to be good enough to survive in the Premier Division. It's a different ball game up there. This team we have now have very little experience. If you took Sean Thornton and Sean Brennan out of the team, there's very few players have actually played in the Premier Division, maybe Steve McGuinness. But the rest of them would only have made 1 or 2 games in the Premier Division under their belt. We don't have that experience that you would need going into the Premier Division. And that's why I'm saying to you, we might have to dismantle the team and undo the good work we've done this year. So it's a catch-22, but obviously we want to win the game. That's why you're in sports. It's in sport to win. We're in a professional league. We want to be professional, and our fans want to get back to the Premier Division. And of course we do as well. We play in the likes of Dundalk. That would be fantastic. But then there's another side of it as well, that you have to think to yourself, you know, what would happen to us in the Premier Division.
We said there you're going to have to outscore Wexford by a couple of goals if you're going to get through this tie. This season in the Premier Division, in the First Division, in your 28 matches, you've scored 42 goals. And then if we look at Wexford in the Premier League, they've won just 6 times in 33 matches and conceded a whopping 70 goals, which is just one less than Longford conceded, who went down. So you did mention earlier that Wexford have conceded quite a few, and your team have been scoring goals, and particularly with Mark Griffin, Gareth McCaffrey and Adam Wixett, who I understand was really, really good in Wexford. You really feel if you can get a goal that you have a chance to outscore them in 90 minutes?
I always feel we can score. There's very few games this year when we haven't scored, but I think our 46 goals for what, the 27 games, 28 games, they're very poor return for the players we have. And that's been a problem this year. It's scoring up a goal. We've got a lot of 1-0, 2-1 wins, which are important as well, but we'd like to score a few more goals. So maybe Friday night now is a good time to start in the last match of the season, and we get a few goals that I think our overall play deserves during the course of the year. But 46 goals is not great. We have to try and rectify that. And as I said, this is the last chance we have this year to do that. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, and Pete, finally, I was at the match against UCD, the last match of the regular season, and I'll be at this game on Friday. And United Park is an old stadium, I think it's fair to say, but the pitch is top class, and when you cram 15, 16, 17, 1800 people into it, it's an incredible atmosphere. And the far side of the pitch, away from where the main stand and the dugouts were for that UCD match, was full to the brim with fans who were making lots of noise. Pete, you'll be hoping for another red-hot atmosphere a few days after Halloween on Friday.
Certainly. The match on Monday, there was a decent crowd there. It was like a morgue, except for the supporters we had downwards who made a bit of noise. I didn't hear too much of the Wexford supporters until they scored the second goal. So our supporters, especially the ultras we have on the far side, they will create an atmosphere no matter where they go. I'm expecting a big crowd here. And as you say, we can replicate the crowd that we had at the UCD game and the game last Friday against Cove. It would be fantastic. It would be a great occasion. And we hope to give them something to cheer about and make that Christmas worthwhile.
That's the voice of the Drogheda United manager, Pete Mann, who is currently in his car on his hands-free kit there on the way to taking training tonight before the second leg against Wexford on Friday. Pete, thanks a million for your time on the way to training. You're probably in match mode at this stage, so the best luck for the rest of your trip and training, and we will talk to you after the game on Friday.
Thanks very much, Jamie. It's a pleasure.
From the Drogheda manager, Pete Mann, to the man who scored one past his team on Monday and plans to do the same this coming Friday in United Park, it's the Wexford Utes striker and main man, Danny Furlong. Danny, welcome to 98FM's League of Ireland podcast. How are you?
Not too bad, lads. Cheers for having me.
No problem, Danny. Now, League of Ireland footballers don't all have full-time jobs, but you are currently out being a good Samaritan to one of your mates.
Yeah, he just hanged me there. The battery in his van went dead, so I had to go down and give him a jump, so... You know, that's something there for sometimes with the lads, but yeah, he's fairly thankful over here now, so he's just driving off here, giving me away.
So the main man for Wexford, scoring all the goals, 30 in the First Division last year, goals this year in the Premier, goals in the playoff and out, giving people jump starts, huh?
Yeah, sure, look, you're a man of many talents as well here, so...
Indeed, your main talent is scoring goals, Danny, and you scored a crucial one to give your team a 1-0 lead. Of course, the second goal by Lee Chin, which we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, made it 2-0, Danny. But your own first goal after a very open first half, and I know you didn't hear Pete Mann's interview, but he did say he felt his team were better in the first half. They hit the post, they hit the crossbar, they had numerous chances, but it was yourself who got a very, very, very good strike to give your team the lead.
Yeah, no, we definitely rode our luck in the first, I'd say, 20, 25 minutes of the game, but... I think we were all a bit nervous, to be honest. It was, you know, the occasion got to a few lads, and myself included. You know, we were kind of a bit shocked, I suppose, at how Drogheda played. We did underestimate them a bit, I suppose, but they did come out and play football, and they attacked us early, and they could have been 2-3 up in the first 20 minutes, like you said. But, you know, we settled down then. We kind of got the ball down. We started, you know, playing our own kind of type of football, and we set the tempo. And, you know, in the second half there, we had words at half time, and we I suppose we came out in the second half, and it was all about us in the second half. I felt that we got on top of Drogheda, and then after the hour, I think it was the 65th minute, I got the goal. I got spacing behind the two centre backs, and luckily enough, the edge of the box, I couldn't cut the kind of half volley any sweeter, and went to the top corner. So look, it's still only half time in the game, but we have to go up to Drogheda, and I suppose it will be hostile enough up there with their fans. So, yeah, hopefully we go up there with a mindset of going up there to actually kind of even win the game. It's always dangerous going up there to hold on to a lead or to sit back and see what they have. But I suppose Shane will have the tactics all spot on again, as usual.
Yeah, I'm just actually watching your goal again here on YouTube, and I'm not sure who you played the 1-2 with, Danny, but what I really love about the goal, and certainly when you scored those 30 goals in the first division the previous season, you were always on the front foot, and once you bounced the ball off there, you were expecting your mate to put you in. You were already on the move, his pass is perfect, and you just see the back of the net and smash in it goes.
Yeah, exactly. You know what type of player I am. I love playing off the shoulder, and any of those balls in behind or through 1-on-1 at the keeper, you know, it just comes naturally to me to, I suppose, to try and hit the net, I suppose. But, you know, certain players, and I suppose that the one who I did play with Sposs, you know, that's his type of play he is. He loves getting in the pocket there in that hole and trying to find little passes like he did. So, you know, our combination worked perfectly.
Yes, Spot, of course, is Paul Murphy, the other striker, and it's a really good example for young players as well of that short and long type routine that if you play with a front two works very well, that you're the one looking to go on behind, he's the one looking to link the play a little shorter, and it certainly worked well for that goal.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose the lads at the back might look for me to go in behind, which then may, I suppose, force their defence to drop, and then that will find, I suppose, give Spot a bit of space then to drop in the hole or in between their defenders and their midfielders. So it does, I suppose, it's kind of the perfect combination if you're going to play two strikers up front.
When Lee Chin was signed, a lot of eyebrows were raised, and I know Shane spoke to us at the time and explained the reasons for signing him. I know he played some games, and centre-back, I believe he played in midfield the other night. Danny, could you quite believe your eyes when he lashed in that volley and added time?
No, I suppose when Chinner came in, I'd known him from previously, and I know him from around town and a few events, and I suppose playing against him underage as well. But the first thing I noticed when he hit the volley, he just burst out laughing, and so did I. So the two of us looked at each other, and we were just, I suppose, this fella on the place laughing there, and because I don't think he kind of really believed what he did. And the first thing he told me is that he didn't know what to do. He said he actually told me he was going to go back and mark his man. He didn't know that he could celebrate, so I suppose that's the type of lad Chinner is. You know, he was actually, I suppose when he came back first, he was still asking a few questions about offside rules and a few things about soccer, which kind of, it did raise a few eyebrows in the dressing room even, you know. But the type of lad he is, you know, he's a funny character. So we took everything with a bit of laughter, I suppose. That's he was. But luckily enough, you know, he has he's came in there, and look, he's been a very important player for us the last couple of games as well. So fair play to him for taking on the challenge.
Yeah, and I suppose when you look back at the if we speak about, you know, trying to stay up, and the manager Shane Keegan and the decision he made to sign Lee Chin, and I know a number of first team players have opted to move abroad in the last month or so, which hasn't been a help, but at the time, Shane may have taken some flack for signing Lee Chin, but he's possibly scored the goal that's going to keep you in the Premier Division.
Yeah, no, it did. Like you said, you know, even around Wexford, it was all kind of, I suppose a few people were kind of questioning how a player could come in that hasn't played, I suppose, in so long, or that's kind of making such a jump, I suppose, in the standard of football, and from basically playing nothing, or some, I suppose coming in from hurling as well. But you know, he's an athlete. He's the type of player that will adapt to any game, or if he's played it before, he'll just pick it back up. So look, that's the type of, I suppose everyone knows what kind of a hurler he is as well. He gets himself around. He's big, he's strong, he's fit. So I suppose if you play any kind of sport, if you do kind of approach it the same way in working your socks off, I suppose you will get the benefits out of it. So luckily enough, Lee, I suppose, I don't know, there's a few questions if he's going to be there Friday, but I suppose he couldn't have signed off better the way he did with that goal, so fair play to him.
Where might he be on Friday, Danny?
He's going to the All-Stars, I think, with the hurling. He's nominated for an All-Star, so he could be up there. I'm not sure, but I think he still has a bit of a question, or I suppose a decision to make, but you know, I don't think anyone's too sure what he's going to do.
Well, maybe he can like accept the award on the pitch in United Park via video link while scoring more outrageous volleys.
Yeah, that'd be even better again. Yeah, that'd be something new, and I wouldn't put it past League of Ireland football, I suppose.
Yeah, Danny, but on a serious note, and we're having a small joke about, you know, him not knowing what to do when he scored, but no matter who scored, you were 1-0 up, and maybe, you know, looking at the game overall, a draw may have been a fair result, and certainly heading up 1-0 with a 1-0 lead to draw it this week would have been a lead, but, you know, it's not the biggest lead you would ever had. That second goal is huge now, and it just gives you something to protect, even though I'm sure you won't want to go and defend now for the whole game on Friday, but it does give you something to hold on to.
Yeah, no, definitely it does. It's a massive goal. I suppose 1-0, we were happy enough, you know, with the way the first half went. And then the timing, I suppose, of the second goal, it was a massive boost for us. But look, too, it's I suppose it's kind of a dangerous, scoreline to have, because you know, I suppose small bit of complacency might tend to settle in. But if try to get one back early, you know, like Cove did against them, and then they got two in the first 10 minutes. Look, it's game on, really. It's I suppose, like I say, yeah, it's a dangerous scoreline, but having the second one, it does give you that little bit of comfort zone, but at the same time, you don't want complacency settling in, so it'll be interesting to see how we go up there and approach the game.
What do you expect, Danny, from the match itself? You spoke there about the Cove match, and I spoke to Jake Hyland during the week, and he said, you know, that he felt that they maybe underestimated Cove a little bit, the fact that they were two up from the first leg, and Cove got those two goals in the opening 10 minutes. Drogheda, I'm sure, will start the match very quickly, but if yourselves happen to go 1-0 up, a 3-goal lead over aggregate, it will be very, very hard for the opposition to pull back.
Yeah, I think we're going to go the best way to approach the game, I think, is to go up there looking for a goal, and I know they're going to come at us, so you might get an open end of game. I don't think maybe if you look back at a couple of our games in the season when we did tend to sit off late in the game, we did tend to concede a lot of goals, and I suppose that's what kind of killed us and put us down near the bottom of the division. So look, we could go up there and just play our attack against their attack and see who scores the most goals. That might be the type of game it could be. But at the same time, we also have to be a bit wary of not conceding early. So for the first maybe 10, 15 minutes, just kind of ride out a bit of a storm and see what they have to throw at us. And then I suppose we can go and play our game and I suppose attack them as good as we can, I suppose.
Yeah, Danny, the importance of trying to stay up, spoke to Shane last week about it on Monday, a man called it Monday, and he just said that the club had two plans in place that they didn't overspend in terms of budgets and wages because they always knew it maybe have been a battle to stay up. I know from the players' point of view, you'll all want to stay up, even though it was been a very, very difficult year, I think with only 6 wins in the 33 matches. But all the players, you'll definitely be hopeful and the club overall to stay up and then hopefully build and maybe have a less struggling season, should I say, next year if you do manage to stay up.
Yeah, that was always the plan. Look, when you do get promoted from a lower division, the first aim is always to stay up and then try to progress it the season after. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see the players, the squad that'll be there next year. So hopefully we might attract a few players from around the region that may have been kind of questioning whether we'd stay up this year. So maybe they'll see now that there is actually talent in the squad, and you know, there might be, I suppose, if you push on to maybe two or three places up further on, and that's another step in the right direction for the club. So look, that's going to be the aim, but point thinking too far ahead of it next year and planning for next year if you don't know what division you're going to be in. So look, it's still going to be all into Friday, and so it's come 10 o'clock, we'll know what the story will be. But first of all, we have to get past this draw of the team that definitely can, I suppose, give us a right goal for that place in the Premier Division.
Danny, just the last two quick questions. Wexford this season have scored only 31 goals in 33 league matches. You scored 30 yourself in the First Division over 28 games the previous year. How have you found your own season? And you'd scored so many goals and done so well in what is obviously a much weaker First Division, but to come up and just not to have had the opportunities, number one, to score and not scored as many goals. You're obviously playing against much better players, but it's been a hard season for everybody.
Yeah, no, definitely. I always knew I knew it was going to be a lot tougher. And look, you can't come up and expect to score that many goals again. Look, we've changed our complete system to where we played last year. You know, last year we were all about attacking teams and I suppose getting the ball out wide and getting in crosses. And I suppose maybe last year I could have had 50, 60 crosses, where this year you might get the ball in behind fullbacks. Maybe, I suppose, over the course of the season, maybe we did it about 10 times, you know. And look, I think I've got six, seven goals in whatever 20 games this year. Was I was never going to say, all right, I'll go up now and score that many goals again or stuff like that. You know, the defences are much stronger, they're much more organised, and teams are just the stepping standard. It's a lot better than First Division, I suppose. In First Division, you have a lot of players learn the trade, whereas in the Premier, you have a lot of experienced players that have been playing for years and know how to play football and know the ins and outs. So look, it's still a part of a learning curve of football, so I've obviously taken every bit of experience I have this year, and hopefully I can take that into next season now as well and see how it goes.
We love our tweets of the week, Danny. They're a feature on the podcast at the end of each podcast each week. The hashtag is Greatest League in the World. We're on Twitter at 98FM Sport. You're on Twitter at Danny_Furlong. But your hashtag at 10 to 11 on Monday evening there was hashtag salt and vinegar. I don't know what was better, scoring that goal or landing the ball in the deep fat fryer in the chip van at the side of the pitch. Hashtag salt and vinegar. Please explain, sir.
Just their left foot was he was on the ball and he was just making a run out from just along the sideline, and I suppose I slid in and I kicked the ball and just went, it landed straight into the, you know, the chip fans that are usually around the pitch that just ride the fans with chips. So the ball landed in the deep fat fryer, and I think the girl that was serving food in there got a bit of a fright and a bit of splashback off the deep fat fryer. So it was I suppose the whole ground had seen it as well. So I kind of had a little chuckle myself because. With the whole ground as well, so it's not like, not something you see every game.
You won't be getting any free chips now, Danny, ever again after a match?
I don't think so, no. I don't think that woman's a woman, is there? I don't think she's speaking to me now anyway.
I thought it had to be like a shot that the chip fan was behind the goal, but it was in fact some sort of tackle or block.
Yeah, it was a tackle on the left full that he was just making a start at the line by the sideline, so I just came across and caught the ball sweet. It was straight, like a dart straight into the chip fan. So I got a chuckle out of the ground, and I suppose lifted a few spirits there. I think it was nil all at the time, so got the crowd going.
Yes, indeed. 69 retweets and 218 likes as well. So yes, we love the League of Ireland players on Twitter. That is the voice of the Wexford striker, Danny Furlong. He'll be playing in United Park again. I'll be out on Friday night. It's drawn against Wexford in the second leg of the relegation promotion playoff. Danny, thanks a million for your time, and the best of luck in the game on Friday.
No problem at all. Cheers for having me again. Cheers.
Bringing you the best League of Ireland analysis, interviews and build-up every week. 98FM's League of Ireland podcast.
Pat Flynn, welcome to 98FM's League of Ireland podcast. How are you?
Not bad at all. How's things?
Great, thanks. Now, Pat has just retired, having finished his career most recently with Longford Town, played for Shell, St Pat, Shamrock Rovers, Waterford, as well as a few clubs in the UK along the way as well. And Pat released what has been widely described online as the greatest retirement statement of all time. Even BBC Match of the Day were tweeting about Pat last night and the statement. If you haven't seen it, go and find it. Just type in Pat Flynn into Twitter. We'll actually tweet it. You know what? 98FM Sport on Twitter, you'll find it if you want to have a read of it, Pat. We won't go through it in full, but the first line is, today I retire, so I thought I better do a statement. And it's fair to say your statement has got quite a good reaction, sir.
Yeah, I just thought like I should probably thank a few people who helped me along the way in my career. And in my personal life as well. And I just wrote down just genuine feelings and posted it on Twitter. And it just really took off. I couldn't believe like the response I got with Ian Wright retweeted it, Match of the Day, as you said, and a few others. And I think people just liked it maybe because it was that bit genuine and it wasn't the run-of-the-mill retirement statement.
Yes, the first paragraph, I didn't want to retire, but the legs don't move like they used to. And when the slowest player in the league says to me, I'll be your legs, I knew I had to call it a day. So thanks to Mark Rossiter for that. So that was the first line where we knew that the statement was going to call out a few different people. And the second line was so good as well, Pat. To Kira, my girlfriend in my Joey's days, and now my wife, as I finished in Longford, you were there for it all. Thanks for your patience, your understanding, and keeping my feet on the ground. Leaving for work at 8 a.m, going straight to training and getting home at 9 p.m. was tough. So to my kids, I apologise for missing you so much, and look forward to spending all of my time with you. If you have my passion on the pitch and your mum's passion in the bedroom, you will excel at whatever you choose. How did Miss Flynn take that line?
Well, that night the passion was at a low because she was asleep as I was writing the statement. So it gave me a bit of time to write the statement, and she woke up the next morning. I never told her about it, and I have to say, thank God she laughed, but I have to give her so much credit because she did, as it says, she kept my feet in the ground. She's been with me through the whole journey, through the ups and downs, more downs than ups, but her and the kids, I'm forever grateful for the patience they've had with me. So it's nice to mention them in the statements, but I like to bring a bit of humour to it as well. And thank God she didn't punch the head off.
not yet, but she might still.
No. There's still time, all right.
There is. Pat, on a serious note, you've had a career in the League of Ireland that stretched back from 2006 when you played for Waterford. A very, very interesting spell at Shamrock Rovers, League of Ireland champion, of course, and all of the things the club did in Europe in and around that time, playing against Cristiano Ronaldo when he came to Tala with Real Madrid in 2009. They didn't have a short spell of Pat's, Shells and Longford. It's been a very, very interesting and overall enjoyable career for you with lots of good memories.
Yeah, it's been brilliant for me personally. Like coming back from England and going to Waterford was probably the best thing I did, because I could have went to a couple of bigger clubs, but I played every week, and I think that's what any young player should probably do, is look for a team where you can play every week and establish yourself instead of sitting on the stand. Then I moved on to Rovers, won a couple of things. Shell, it didn't go so well. Pats, I enjoyed, loved my time at Pats, but unfortunately the lads were outstanding. And then Longford is sort of rekindled my love of football again, Longford, because I was in and out of Shells and in and out of Pats as well. But my spell at Rovers, I'd have to say, is my favourite time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Let's speak about the spell at Shamrock Rovers, Pat. Another line in the statement, you talk about kind of the different people you've played against and the different people that you've marked. One of those people was Mr. Cristiano Ronaldo, who is now one of, if not the best player in the world, and you played against him, I think, back in 2009. In the statement, it says it gave me the chance to mark Cristiano Ronaldo from corners, and he has one of the best leaps around.
Well, yeah, that was it. It was like, it wasn't down to anything we did. That game just fell on our laps. At the time, we were doing very well as well in the league and in Europe. The game just fell on our laps, and at the time, Michael O'Neill came in and said, we're going to be playing Real Madrid. And we went in the dressing room before. He was reading out the set pieces. So he's asking Darren Maguire to mark Raul. And he said to me, you'd be marking Ronaldo. We're just looking at each other, scratching our heads, saying, is this really true? And I remember just standing in the tunnel, like looking across at the Real Madrid team and thinking, these are superstars. But the one sort of memory that will stick out to me was they were the best smelling team I've ever played against. I don't know what they had on them, but they smelled beautiful.
So they must have had their own Real Madrid branded aftershave to spray just before they came out to make the Shamrock Rovers players fancy them and maybe not try and like kick them.
Maybe that's what it was, but it didn't work on me.
Indeed it didn't. But yeah, he is a man who, you watch him head the ball and jump and run, but particularly like in the box, he just seems to be able to leap in the air unlike anybody else. And that's why I personally think he's better than Messi, because he has that in his locker and he's quicker. But talk to me about trying to mark him from corners.
It was tough. Now, at the same time, Real Madrid just wanted to get through the game and get a bit of fitness. We upped our game for it. They only won 1-0, but they were miles ahead of us. The first touch, everything they did, even though they were taking us slowly, it was nice to mark him. It was nice to get the chance to be able to tackle him, but it was a once in a lifetime. A match like that will never happen again. Ronaldo making his debut in Tala, just down the road from where I'm living now. So it's just an opportunity that the team and the club grasped with both hands.
Yeah, of course, you also played in the Europa League that year. Of course, we now have Dundalk doing the same thing. And that was back in 2011, which I think, Pat, was your final season at Shamrock Rovers. What are your memories of that time? And another Pat that played for the club, one of your good friends, Mr. Pat Sullivan, with that incredible volley and that long-range strike. And I know the club didn't win any of the Europa League games, but it was the first time in a long, long time that a club had done so well in Europe, and you were a part of that.
Yeah, we did very well. It's good. Like, Pat Sullivan, one of my good friends, is the one that kept me out of the team, ironically. But I was glad for the team. There was real togetherness in that team. Did really well. And it was a lot of people that year mentioned the Real Madrid game, but that was nothing to us. The lads worked really, really hard and earned the right to go into Europe. They got to the group stages, and the team just did very well that day. And it was right through with the squad. Michael O'Neill signed very clever that year. We had about six or seven really, really good players, and then about five or six really, really hungry players as well. I think you need that mix in it as well. You don't all have to be superstars, and that's what we had that year, and we did really, really well now.
Yeah, the 25th of August and the 58th minute when Pat Sullivan lashed in that goal away to Partizan Belgrade, and things went mad from there, really.
Yeah, it just really took off. When we walked out in Belgrade, they were booing us. It was really, really intimidating coming out. The two sets of fans in Belgrade, their own supporters, were fighting each other. And by the end of it, they stood up and clapped us off. It was like something out of Rocky, and something I'll never forget. Then after that, we went on, pushed on, and won the league quite early. So it was a really, really good time in my career.
One other brilliant paragraph in the statement. To the referees, I apologise for the tackles and my colourful language that has led to them colourful cards. My wife would like to thank you for the hundreds of euros in fine I had to pay because of you. And Pat Flynn, it is very fair to say that you did have a love-hate relationship or a hate-hate relationship with the League of Ireland officials.
I don't think it was hate-hate. I think it was just more they were doing their job properly. I was, at the start, when I came into the league, was very stupid, probably. I wasn't really a dirty player. I was just a silly player. I'd just kick out for no reason, or we never went in to intentionally injure anybody. But when I tried to shake that reputation the last few years, I couldn't do it. Like, if I went into a tackle, I could get a red card, where another player might get a yellow card. And that's nothing really to do with the referees. It was my own fault for building that reputation. But I also found when I tried to take the aggression out of my game wasn't as good either. So I needed it, and it was just hard to find that fine line.
Yeah, your Wikipedia has all your stats, the clubs you've played for, the goals you've scored, the honours you've won. But there isn't a section on suspensions and cards, which I found quite strange in your case.
Well, I probably have more suspensions than games. I don't know who updates those, but I'm sure they get on to it after they hear this interview, and I hope they actually don't hear the interview and don't update that bit.
Well, you have more time now that you're retired to update it yourself with whatever figures you want.
That's true. I might just put a few false claims on there to make myself look a bit better than it was.
We spoke, Pat, about your time at Shamrock Rovers when you won two League of Ireland titles, were involved in the Europa League squad, certainly at the beginning, the Real Madrid match and other amazing matches, and the Setanta Cup as well in 2011. Longford Town, you know, have had a tough season this season. In a minute, we're actually going to talk to the manager, Alan Matthews, but you actually won the first division there in 2014. Longford had a very, very good season that season, along with Wexford, the two teams that managed to go up and stay up until now. And that was a very good season for you personally, and for the club as well, to be playing winning football. There was quite good crowds there towards the end, and getting back up to the Premier too.
Yeah, it was really good. It was a big decision for me to drop down. I had a couple of offers from Premier clubs to stay up, but I weighed it up, and I knew if we dropped down, there was a good chance Longford would come back up as well with the squad they already had there. And I knew the player Tony was looking to sign. We came up, probably rekindled my love of football again, because I'd been in and out of teams, and Tony had me playing really well, playing centre back again. And when we got up, we held our own in the division for the first year, and then this year, unfortunately, we couldn't kick on. I thought we had a team that was probably good enough to stay up, but performances dictated otherwise. We were the worst team in the league. We deserved to finish where we did, because the top team in the league always deserves to finish top if they're the best team, and the worst team in the league always finishes last, whether it's goal difference or points, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, just want to ask you, Pat, a couple of bits about, you know, other parts of the stadium, or the stadium of the statement, should I say. Your time at Shells, and I know it wasn't an overly long spell that you had with Shelburne. I think you played maybe one season there, and the club are in a very, you know, I suppose a crossroads in where they're going, and are they moving to Daly Mount? Looks like they are. The fans aren't overly happy with it. And you mentioned in the statement that, you know, Shells are such a huge club and they shouldn't be in the situation that they're in. How do you reflect on your one season there, and I suppose where the club is now and where it's trying to go to? I had Owen Heary on last week, and we all know he's a winner, and talking about wanting to get experienced winning players to get them back up. But it's quite sad looking at where the club is now, getting very, very low attendances and fans not happy with the move to Daly Mount. And I think they finished sixth this season in the first division, which is quite disastrous, really.
Yeah, well, just for me personally, I was suspended for the first few games when I came into Shells, and then it just never happened. I thought we had a really good team there. Not really good, but a team well enough to finish even below mid-table comfortably. And we had a good dressing room. It never happened there again either. And just such a big club, a good fan base, and even when we were playing, the numbers weren't there. The crowds weren't coming in the door. And it's sad to see, because when I first started watching the League of Ireland years ago, the stadiums used to be full. I know there's a lot more money there at the time, but it was sad to see. And it's a regret I had, because like, nobody likes to get relegated, but Shells was such a big club, and I thought we did have the squad to stay up, but it just wasn't to be that year. So it's a regret that'll stick with me now.
Yeah, and where the club is now, I know you've obviously just stopped playing. You played in the Premier last season, so you wouldn't have come up against them. But the fan protests and Owen Heary now in charge, the club didn't have a good season under Kevin or Owen. And depending on what happens with the playoff on Friday, it'll either be Drogheda, or Wexford who will be with them, and then you've got UCD and other clubs like that. You're sure Longford will definitely strengthen and look for a push. We've seen Cove do so well. It'll be hard for them to try and make that top three, but it's something that Owen Heary certainly has experience in winning as a player and as a manager.
Yeah, well, if there's someone who can do it, it's Owen. Like he seems to manage the way he played. He's a great work ethic, and he's good young lads there. I personally think he needs a few experienced lads down there. And being a Dublin-based club, it could be easy to attract them. I'd like to see them get up there, get up around the playoffs, and push on, but it will be tough. Longford will be back down there because they train in leagues that they could attract Dublin-based players, and Cove will be thereabouts as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next year.
Pat, the last couple, the piece about Shamrock Rovers, to everyone at Shamrock Rovers, thank you. Friday nights, and coming from my house, you could see the floodlights, and I can actually see them now myself. Any time I go to cover a game there, I would be driving up off the M50, and you can actually see the floodlights when you're coming towards the stadium. You speak about pulling on the famous green and white, hearing the fans sing as you wait in the tunnel, the teasing smell of burgers and chips as you wait for the whistle to blow. It's what you dream of. I was just a fan that got lucky, and certainly the analogy you use of driving towards Tallinn, you can see the lights, just gives you a taste of what that place can be like.
That's it, yeah. I used to come off the M50 and see the lights, but now I'm living in Tallinn now myself, so I can see the floodlights from my house. And when you used to be driving down, like, if it was a big match against Bowes or whoever it was, the butterflies would start when you see the floodlights switched on. And exactly as the statement said, from everything when you get out of your car, to the smell, to the chips and sausages, to pulling on the green and white, to standing in, the fans singing songs about you, and then that the whistle goes, and 90 minutes, anything can happen, and that you could win, lose, could be fights, could be a boring draw, anything could happen, and that's what football is all about.
To the fans of Bowes, I loved playing in Daly Mount. I loved the abuse and loved having Coke bottles hopped off my head. I didn't like you, but I have to say I admired your passion too, and I'll miss it. And you did have a nice relationship and partnering with referees, Pat, with some of the opposition fans and clubs that you played for, because you were a heart-on-the-sleeve type of player, and you were often involved in some strong tackles and stuff like that. And it's fair to say that the Bowes fans, particularly when you were a hoop, wouldn't have been your biggest supporters.
No, they weren't my biggest support, and I think when I went to Longford then, it might have been me and Rice were the only Longford players, so they gave us a bit of abuse then, but I returned as much as I could as well. I loved winning at Daly Mount. That's football's about rivalries. If you haven't got rivalries, clubs could struggle. I think if you even look the way Scotland was the last few years when Rangers weren't in it, I think Celtic struggled a bit, but getting back to Ireland, Bowes and Rovers are probably a bigger club than Celtic. But you can't be like, I enjoyed like the abuse they shouted at me. I enjoyed more than anything winning in Daly Mount than any other stadium, because I kept them quiet for a while. And there's a few lads in work who'd be big fans of Bowes as well. So it was always nice to get a win there. But you're right, I didn't like them, and if I get my ticket for Daly Mount next year, I'll be with the Rovers fans shouting abuse at them.
You'll be in there with your hood up so they can't see you.
I don't know. They'll still spot me with quite a big head.
Indeed. It gave me the chance as well to play in the same team as the man people say is the maddest man in football, Paul Gascoigne. This was true until I met Bocker Bailey. And Bocker Bailey, for those who don't know, I don't know him really at all. But from stories from different people around the league and different clubs he's played for and different things he's done, can you give us a PC version of Bocker Bailey?
I was actually trying to think of a few sort of PC stories, and I couldn't think of one. So I was talking to my friend. He said, you should write a book. And I said, if I had to write a book and involve Bocker Bailey, I'd have to write it, you'd have to read it and burn it and never speak of it again.
That's as PC as it gets.
That's it. I can't go any further than that.
Very finally, Pat Flynn, you go through the players you've played against, the players you've played with, from international players to one of your heroes, Mr. Irwin, Gary Twigg, Mark Salmon, of course, Stephen Rice and Pat Sullivan, two of your great friends, Gaza, who we just mentioned as well. And the future now for yourself, and it doesn't really go into too much detail in the statement, apart from that, you know, your legs won't run anymore and you wanted more time with your family. Why retire and what next?
Why I retired is I got hip surgery last year, and the Dr. Carton down there in Waterford suggested I retire last season, but I wanted ideally to do another two seasons. This year, halfway through the season, I realised I couldn't. The pain after matches was killing me. I felt personally, when I was playing in teams, I felt there was better young lads, I was holding back and they could go on and progress and have really good careers. So that was part of the reason I didn't want to retire one bit, but the body suggested otherwise. For the future, long term, I probably will get into coaching. I'd like to ideally to coach kids where you can see progressing. I don't think I'll be into senior football much, and I'll maybe look to concentrate on getting back and doing social care in college. But I'll have a good think about it. The PFAI have a career guidance lady, so I'll go meet her and have a chat and see what the best option is.
The final part, Pat, of the statement is really, really nice, and I'm, apart from a journalist and a coach, I'm a League of Ireland fan, and the whole statement, just people, and I know from just how well it's been received online, people can relate to every bit of it. But the final bit, anybody who watches football will know I'm an average player, but hard work and commitment was the reason I got all these chances. If I can do it, anyone can. Never give up. Thank you, football. Which was a really nice way to finish, because the statement shows what a life League of Ireland football has given you, and you just wanted to say thank you to it.
That's it. It's the best game in the world. It's given me so many opportunities to play against great players, to make friends, and just to have a really, really good life. And that's why I said thank you to football. I see a lot of lads when the dream doesn't work in England, and they could be the best players I've ever played against, and they just fall out of football altogether. So that's why I said, just to any young lad, you will have like more downs than ups, just keep going and never give up, because just play at the highest level you can, whether it's Astro with your friends, Leinster Senior League, League of Ireland or in England. Just work your socks off and you'll get your rewards.
Very, very well said. We spoke off air, Pat Flynn, and we weren't sure if we could match the statement with the interview, but we've certainly gone, have certainly gone some way towards that. It's a brilliant statement and a really nice interview as well. Pat, thank you so much for your time, and the best of luck with the retirement. Off now up to Ciara to apologise for what you said about her in that statement.
Cheers, thanks very much. I have a lot of grovelling to do.
And the next time you're in Tally, you can have the burger and chips, and the next time you go to Daily Mail as well, you can have the bottle of Coke that's thrown at you.
No problem. Thank you, sir.
This is 98FM's League of Ireland podcast.
From former Longford Town defender Pat Flynn to the current Longford Town manager Alan Matthews. Alan, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
Really good, Alan. Yourself?
Grant, thank you. Grant.
I'm sure you saw the statement from one of your former centre-halves, Pat Flynn, and we just had a brilliant 25-minute chat all about his life and times in the League of Ireland. What's your thoughts on the statement number one and his decision to retire?
I suppose, if you like, Pat himself realised that he wasn't able to do himself justice last year, and I'd say reluctantly he decided to call it a day. I signed him for Shelbourne, and he was at Longford when I went back in this year as well. Good guy, good player, brought a lot to the group, and I think probably himself was disappointed with the way things panned out at both Shelbourne and Longford. He has a lot to offer the game, and I think you'll probably see him coming back in some capacity over the next couple of years, maybe when he decides to go down the coaching route. But there's guys that play the game, and he loves football, and he has a passion about the game. Sometimes it's spilled over in his earlier periods, and I had a few words with him. He had a few words with me about that, but we kind of sorted those issues out very much so. And I think Pat, when he played at Rovers, when he played at Pats, when he played at Shells, when he played at Longford, he gave everything. I think he was well liked by all the players and managers that he played with and for, and the supporters likewise. So he's a good fella, and I suppose at an age of 31, it's a shame to see a good call it a day. Down purely to the fact that injuries just caught up with him. So I wish him well. He's a good fella, and as I said, I think he'll have a lot to offer in a different capacity in the years to come.
You're listening to 98FM's League of Ireland podcast with Jamie Moore on Wednesday, joined on the line by the Longford Town manager Alan Matthews, who was confirmed this week is going to stay at the club as manager for the next two seasons. Longford, unfortunately, relegated from the Premier Division this year. Alan only took over after the midway point in the season when the previous manager, Tony Cousins, had left the club. So, first question, Alan, in terms of your current job, why are you staying at Longford?
I like the club. I like the people involved with the club. I think it's got great potential to come straight back up. And I want to be parcel of it going for the next couple of seasons. I came in as just the tail end of August, and we weren't able really to affect an awful lot of things. We tried to do a few things differently to see if we could get a positive reaction. We didn't get a reaction, and the team got relegated. So we got to change that and move on. Some players will stay, players will go. But as a club, the club is very much a Premier Division club. The facilities and the infrastructure that's at the club, the training ground that's there. And Jim has been at the, since I was there, Jim Handy, through thick and thin. And he's very much of the opinion that he wants a very, very swift return back to the Premier League. Nothing is guaranteed. It's going to be a very competitive First Division next year. But we'll very, very, very much try our best and do our best to come up with, on the pitch, the results that will match, I think, the results that have taken place off the scenes and behind the scenes to push the club forward.
Yeah, if we make the comparisons, Alan, to the season just gone, 33 matches played, just two wins, and unfortunately were relegated, but slip back to 2014 when Longford won the First Division at a canter, scoring, you know, 56 goals in 28 games, 18 wins, just four defeats, by far and away the best team in the division that season. And I was actually in Longford the night where, you know, the final night of the season, they were actually securing promotion in front of a massive crowd, and the place was hopping. And that'll be the hope for you, is to try and get the group and the club to rediscover that winning form again that, unfortunately, over the last two seasons hasn't really been there.
That's it, Jamie, yeah. I mean, that last game, I think I was at the match to beat Rovers, beat Team 5-0 that night to secure the league, and the place was strong. I've managed down there when the place has been, where it's been full. There is a passionate support, gone off the radar a little bit the last year. We try and get them back, and they'll come out and support the winning team. But it's a very good club. There are very, very good people there, and you've got to try and give that back. The ground is excellent. You've got a training ground to the rear of the ground. It's just moved on. And I think if you can reach, and no season's the same, but if you can get anywhere near the levels the club achieved in 2014 and get used that as a yardstick, if you pick up that amount of wins, if you pick up those amount of points, you're going to be thereabouts at the end of the season. And that's what they've got to really try and do. Either Wexford or Drogheda are going to be in it. You've got Waterford talking about coming in with new money and a fresh investment. You got Shelbourne, you got Cove, who, you know, got into the playoffs this year, and I haven't even mentioned UCD. So there's going to be a lot of clubs who will have ambitions and they will have designs and will have resources to try and get out of that division. We just have to try and be as competitive and as good as we can, and hope that it's better than the rest. But I think there's a good dynamic at the club. There's a strong, hard-working committee. There is good support down at the ground and around the town, and if we get the team playing in the right way and winning the right matches, they'll come out and support us. So that's the trick, I suppose, is to get all those parts linked in together.
Yeah, because I think if you can get the winning football part, and it sounds weird to say that if you're winning most weeks in the First Division, you'll get more fans coming to watch you than if you're losing every week in the Premier Division, even though you have Shamrock Rovers and the likes to come.
Yeah, I think, Jamie, people will come out and support a winning team. I said in my notes the other day in the programme, you know, it's disappointing that we won't be playing clubs like Shamrock Rovers again next season, because we're going to be in the First Division. But you have to have a hunger to try and get back to doing that. And if that's picked up by everybody at the club, supporters, players, people working behind the scenes, and you're winning matches, people will come out and get behind it. And that becomes infectious then. It becomes a habit. It becomes the new norm. And you feed off it, and I think supporters will feed off it. Look at the crowd now at the match for Drogheda's game on Friday night. There'll be a huge crowd up in United Park. The crowds have steadily improved this year because the club have been thereabouts all season, battling for promotion. Likewise down in Cove. So
we want to get into that space, and hopefully next year that's where we find ourselves.
And I'm sure everybody, Alan, will look to do a Limerick as such, which I know is probably an unfair comparison in terms of the amount of money that Limerick invested and maybe the quality of the squad that Martin Russell was able to keep. Having gone down, the club decided to back him and give him the money to keep them all, and they've, as we've seen, gone back up losing just one match all season. So how do you go about the job now of trying to create a winning team and trying to keep your best players in the group? Because if you can do that, we said it's a very competitive first division, but if you can do that, you'll have a great chance to go back up first time around.
Yeah, we're in the process of trying to talk to a couple of guys now. Obviously, talk to the guys that were there this season first, and those that we want to retain and keep. We want to tie them down as quickly as we can. It's about resources. A lot of our fellas would have options from other clubs, but I think there's a good feel about Longford Town, and any of the players that have played there over the last couple of seasons, even in my previous time there, would all echo that. It's a good club to be playing for. We want to do that, but obviously, we haven't got a limitless budget. We've got to work within the budget that we have. And we want to make sure, though, that any of the players that either decide to stay on board from last year or new players that come in, that they just have this hunger and this attitude about them, which is to get out of the division. Win it, absolutely. And if you can't win it, well, then come through a playoff. But there has to be hunger and a desire. And the character of the player will really have to be the paramount. I think we've got good players. We've got some very, very good footballers in the club at the moment. And if we make sure that their character is right and new players that come in have similar character, that can make up for an awful lot of inadequacies, if you like, on the technical side of things. So that's the first prerequisite, that we need to get guys who are hungry and have a real desire and a belief that they want to get into the Premier Division with the club.
Well, certainly the manager speaking to me now seems to have all of those, Alan. A final one, and it's an interesting one for Longford and for a number of the clubs, the likes of maybe Athlone, the same, certainly in previous times. We're training in Dublin. I know Longford have trained over the last number of years in League Slip. Is the plan to do that again? And if it is, that does give you the option to have, as the club have had, a lot of players from Dublin. I remember even going to a game recently in Longford where half the squad were meeting at the Lucan's Bath to jump in three cars to drive down to a home match because they were all coming from Dublin. But it does give you a bigger player pool, even if you're maybe looking to get younger players from some of the other clubs. You can offer them football.
Was at the club originally. We trained at Westonstown. We have been, and the base has been at League Slip United for the last 4 or 5 years. It's ironic that the chairman of that football club is Paul Martin. Paul Martin's the father of Robbie and Johnny Martin, who you would know quite well,
yes,
and who both played for me at Longford Town. So there's a real connection between both clubs, and that would be our Dublin base. The ground is an hour from Longford, so any of the guys that are around the Longford area, it takes them an hour to get the training. We've gone down and will go down to Longford the odd occasion to train as well. But the base is very much for it's a Dublin orientated training base, which is in League Slip. It's been there for a number of years and the facilities are second to none. But on top of that, we also have the option of going down to the ground where a new training ground has been developed to the rear of the actual current pitch. And again, that's second to none. So we have options and we have facilities available to us that are very, very good. And we can cover off most boxes, but as I said, having a base in Dublin and having a base in Longford.
Alan, very finally, we spoke to Pete Mahan and Mr. Danny Furlong from Wexford earlier on about the playoff. I'm not sure if you're planning to head to the second leg on Friday. I'll certainly be going myself. What's your views on it? Wexford obviously leading 2-0 from the first leg, but we saw the previous time with Drogheda and Cove that a 2-0 lead can be clawed back very, very quickly.
It certainly gone. It was there on Monday, and I'd have to say, from Pete's point of view, I was very disappointed for him because 1-0, yeah, you'd have fancied them going back, being somewhat happy with that, and just the concession of the goal, and it was a great finish, but the game was nearly done, and you know, it just puts a real different context on it. If they get an early goal, rather, anything can happen, and I think I've been at a number of playoff games over the last couple of years. I wouldn't write anything off. I certainly wouldn't write Drogheda off. And I think Wexford will know themselves. They have their noses in front, but anything can happen. So I think it'll be a good game. It'll be a sparky, tense atmosphere on Friday night. I'm definitely going to the game. And if Drogheda were to get a goal, even the first hour, if you get a goal then, I wouldn't write them off. Wexford could pick them off. Danny Furlong probably has something to say about that. He might be able to pick them off on a break, but it'd be interesting to see. And it's not over, and I could see it going twists and turns again before the thing is finished on Friday night. So I wouldn't write anything off at this stage for either club.
Alan, I'll see you for Team Biscuits at half time.
All right, Jamie, no problem.
Thanks a million.
You're welcome, Jamie. 98
FM. Now, that is almost it for the very second last edition of 98FM's League of Ireland podcast for the season. Insert sad face here. Yes, we're all very sad. People who may not be very sad, a couple of other news lines to bring you this week. Waterford United, financial worries, of course. Looks like they're going to ease possibly an English-based consortium with previous links to Irish football. Rumours involving possible Irish internationals as well, that Pat Fenlon could take over the role as director of football. The former Shamrock Rovers manager, Bohemians manager Shells and Hibs as well, of course, left Shamrock Rovers, was sacked earlier this season. It looks like Pat Fenlon, he was down there at the weekend, could be the director of football, with the Cork assistant manager, first team coach Alan Reynolds, who's also worked at St. Pat's and a number of other clubs, coming in as his assistant manager. Piece in a number of the newspapers this week, including The Sun, to say that a potential new owner was convinced to help out the Blues after attending their final game of the season against Athlone. An official announcement is expected in the next week or so. So interesting times looking ahead for Waterford United. Other stories this week of interest. Roberto Lopez, the Bohemians midfielder slash centre-half, could be making the move across Dublin from the Gypsies to the Hoops. The Sun again reporting that his move to Shamrock Rovers is very, very close. Although today, League One side Walsall apparently have also expressed an interest in signing Pico, a good friend of the podcast here on 98FM. So a very good luck to him if he decides to leave Bowes. He's been a great servant to the club over the years, to try and move to full-time football, either with Shamrock Rovers or possibly even further afield as well. And that is almost it for another week on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast. We are on Twitter, as you'll know. It's at 98FM Sport is where you'll find us on Twitter. And also, where you'll find the hashtag Greatest League in the World, and our Greatest League in the World League of Ireland tweets. First one from Peter says, Lee Chin will miss the second leg of the relegation promotion playoff as he will attend the GAA All-Star Awards on Friday night. Excuse me, hashtag Greatest League in the World. Wexford may want him there, so as a joke with Danny Furlong, possibly he might kind of accept the award via video link in Drogheda. That might work. Reason number 2455 why the At SSE Electricity League is the hashtag greatest league in the world. You wouldn't get it anywhere else, says Kian on Twitter. And it was, of course, at Padgio Flynn's. It was great crack, as he released his statement. If you haven't found it or read it, find at Padgio Flynn on Twitter, which is at P-A-J-O Flynn. Patrick Flynn is his name. And that unbelievably brilliant retirement statement, which you'll find in full on his Twitter page. Danny Furlong's tweet, which you brought to earlier on, at Danny _ Furlong. I don't know what was better, scoring that goal or landing the ball in the deep fat fryer in the chip van at the side of the pitch. Hashtag salt and vinegar. I would be a salt and vinegar man myself. Neil O'Riordan from the Irish Sun newspaper. Braised Dean Kelly playing in a kickabout with kids after beating Cork. Hashtag greatest league in the world. Anita's taking the grainiest photo ever of Dean Kelly in his number 9 strip, playing ball with a load of kids in what looks like a stadium in the Carlisle grounds with the lights turned off. Yeah, looked like a great game that. Sligo Rovers DSC says, glasses found here at the game. The announcement said that they belong either to a child or someone with a small head. Smiley face. Hashtag greatest league in the world. Hopefully it wasn't some like small old person who was, you know, small, and would be not nice to accuse him of having a small head. Would I have a small head myself, in fact? Anyway, that's it for another week on 98FM's League of Ireland podcast. That has been episode 33, would you believe? We're back next week for our final episode of the season, where we're going to pick our team of the year. We're going to give out some Player of the Year awards and reflect on the seasons, mainly for the Dublin clubs, and of course the FAI Cup final, which takes place at the Aviva Stadium this coming Sunday. Now, that's what I call Sport on your radio, 98FM, presented by myself. It's here every Sunday morning between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. We're going to have a full preview of the FAI Cup final with players from both clubs and our pundit, Air Sport expert, and the man who looks very nice on the TV in his suit, Damien Lynch. We'll be here to look ahead to that game as well. On the That's What I Got Sport this Sunday, Fergus Ryan, our MMA and UFC expert, will be here to look ahead to Conor McGregor's next big fight. Of course, the first in New York City. We'll also reflect on Ireland against the All Blacks, and plenty more besides on the That's What I Got Sport this Sunday morning from 9 a.m. I'm heading up to Drogheda on Friday night to watch Drogheda against Wexford. It should be a cracking game. It's a 7:45 kickoff at United Park. So if you're not doing anything, get the winter woolies on and get up to watch the last regular season League of Ireland game of the season. That's a tongue twister. It makes sense. Be there. I'll be there. And I'll talk to you from 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. Have a great week, folks. See you later. Thank you. Bye-bye.
For up-to-the-minute League of Ireland coverage, see 98fm.com/sport. 98FM's League of Ireland podcast is back next Wednesday. And every Wednesday on 98FM.com, the 98FM app, and on the 98FM Sport iTunes channel. 98FM.